I'll be glad to elaborate. I'll be glad to talk about something else. I'll be glad to go sit with Mike.
Well, why this Alan's book? Why did you decide to bring that?
For tonight?
Yeah.
Why that among the myriad of other things I could have done?
Yeah.
I read it recently, and I wrote something that went in the TAP forum about that book. So it's been on my mind. It's a book that applies to our work day worlds, you could say, as well as our spiritual worlds. I use it at work.
You agree with that last point?
Pretty familiar with it.
Do you agree with that last point that you said about it being no more difficult to be a great company than a good one? And if you agree with that, what does that mean? It sounds great.
But it's exactly what you said, that if I look at the life that I was living before I got interested in the spiritual path, it was every bit as hard as the life once I started making motions to try to find out the truth. Every bit as hard. Well, I still held all the illusions about what life could be. I really struggled with this whole idea of I'm going to be missing out on XYZ if I take a spiritual... if I get more involved in this, what am I going to miss out on? And that's exactly what happens to companies that fail to go from good to great, or that go from great back to good. It's one of the reasons, because they see all these opportunities, surrounded by opportunity. But if they stray from their hedgehog, from their core value, their energy begins to get diffuse.
My sense is that it's like not only should you be interested in going from good to great, but that at some point you want to and have to, practically, for whatever that means. I don't know exactly what that means, but in the sense of paring down the extraneous energy, you know, outlets and stuff like that. And I can't say for certain, but that's just my intuition. It's like a decision you really want to do that, or have to.
Well, yeah, I think that goes back to Art's thing about, well, what's... the way I took what you were talking about is, well, what do we really want? What does our essence really want? You know, if we allow that to come forth, then what you're saying is very true. But if we don't, we procrastinate for potentially a long time.
Did he explain why companies stray or look for other opportunities?
He gave some examples of companies that did that, and a company. Well, where does the strategy tend to come from? It tends to come from the top, and sometimes new CEO comes on board. He has a different idea. He has different personal interests. You know, if a company makes toilet paper, well, he's now CEO. He may not find toilet paper is particularly interesting. He would rather they be making diapers instead. You know, so they begin to... his personal interest begins to pull away from their original concept, their core idea.
Ego. They want to make their mark.
Yeah.
I've seen that on a goodly scale in the business dealings I've had. That worked to my advantage. Some guy will come in and wants to put his stamp on some place, so he knows about some software product and he doesn't know whether it's better or good or bad. All he knows is it's something he knows that the people, the company, don't know. So he brings it in to put his stamp on the company.
The matter of peer group has to really be looked at. You can't escape. You are in a peer group. and there are precedents in orders in peer groups. So you're trying to figure out what people are up to. That has a big hunk of what's going on. Everybody's scrambling for the top.
We had a consultant come in one time, and they were selling us the idea that, well, basically, you have to be a master of all trade. I mean, a jack of all trade and a master of none. It's like they wanted us to be spread out, you know, have a little bit of knowledge across a diversified range of stuff.
Mm.
You know, and it just gets confusing, you know, like, well, there was a point to that, too, you know, because then you have a breadth of knowledge, not just a depth. Yeah, but this sounds like, you know, you need that one thing, that you need that depth.
Oh, you know, if you decide that I want to be an expert in some tiny field, the deeper you get into it, the more you go out this way at the same time. You know, because you see these connections. You know, I find that the more you explore something deeply, the more you see how it's tied in so many areas of life. Now, you may not go, you know, you may not explore down those, but you see connections you never saw, never imagined it before.
Yeah, perhaps I could offer it. I understand business, and part of that, which is instructive for the spiritual world, is that it's boring to run a business day in and day out with what you have at hand. But that's where success comes from. Welch would tell you that. That doing the mundane, boring, day-to-day checklists and doing it the same way every single day, it's boring. So business people become deal junkies because it's a lot more fun. And I think Fortune said that of all the mergers and acquisitions in the last 15 years, something like 80% of them after 10 years post the merger still have a worse stock value than at the time of the merger, when it was heralded as having costs and scale and all this craziness. And I think we as spiritual seekers also get bored at the tools we have in hand, and it's easier to look for the new seminar or the new book and the like, and I think it's very similar to business.
And it goes back to the hedgehog. So there's to be an element of patience.
It also seems like it goes back to Art bringing up, I guess, I don't remember exactly how you put it, some sort of remembrance of, in other words, to get in touch with that longing again. So it's not just the task that you're just doing every day and, you know, checking off the list, that you can actually engage with it authentically.
Oh, yeah. Time and again, he talked about the passion that the people in the great companies have for things that, to us, like he brought up Philip Morris, that these people are passionate about cigarettes. They love the business. They like smoking themselves. They like, you know, they like providing this to people. You know, so yeah, it has to be something that is in here. We have to find a connection. We have to find our passion.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like it's the biggest adventure, the best adventure you've ever wanted. It's like we're explorers. We're 50. So, what about the MS spirit? If you get the toilet paper, so what? If it's what you want.
Oh, yeah. He talks about how to find your hedgehog concept, but it doesn't, it's not analogous to the individual. And passion is part of that. What's your passion? But then the other part of it is the economic factor, what gives you the greatest, not profit, but monetary value per unit. And then there's another one. I couldn't twist that to my needs.
It doesn't work. I mean, I've worked a lot of jobs and I've done things that I didn't want to do and it was 10 times harder. But doing what I want to do, I might be working 10 times as much, but you know, there's something that's a lot easier to do stuff you want to do. And this, if this isn't someone's true thing, it doesn't have to all be just drudgery and whatever. I mean, there is that there, but you're not going. I don't think you can go each day and say, "Oh, this is terrible," because you're finally doing what you were made to do. So that can be equated to passion or
absolutely
desire.
I feel like you may have addressed it in more in the what you wrote for the top forum, but I'm trying to remember what it was that you said about, you know, when also to know that, you know, it may not seem that there's just some mistake that you have to either look in the mirror about, but knowing when you're putting this consistent energy into something that may not be on the right path, how. You know, because if this is something you're turning very, very slowly, then you may not see a lot of change, and there has to be this kind of questions, there has to be this kind of dedication. It seems like there also has to be some kind of checking in regularly to know if you're even still going the right way.
In terms of very practical for us on a spiritual path, how do we know that the teacher that we're following is actually the person we should be? Is that what you're...
Yeah, I mean, how you may, you know, sometimes just it seems, and I haven't been on this that long, but that people will walk a certain path for a certain time, and then it seems
how
that
do we determine our profit? How much profit are we getting from what we're following?
Sure, that, you know, you're making the decision when... You know, it's not, there's not necessarily this problem, something that you need to look at what went wrong, but knowing that you're no longer headed the right way, or something's off course, or you need to go and meet to another teacher or something.
Oh, I think I see. You're saying, well, how do we know when it's time to change, really?
Yeah.
When we have become something more than we were, and we can leave behind what we were doing?
That, or even knowing when. That maybe there even hasn't been that much change, but part of that's not necessarily because you haven't put enough time and energy into it, but simply because it's not the right path.
How do you know where the right path?
Yeah, is it merely a matter of going within and checking in, or is there something else that goes with it? And I don't know how business is, you know, if it's going back to a mission statement or not, and looking at it that way, but.
Let me look at, there was one note that I had in here. No, I didn't bring it with me. All I can speak from is what I did along that line. And, you know, I was the type of person who would just beat something to death until long past when I should have changed something else. You know, it's a dead, the horse is dead.
But you look at other people in the same path, in the same endeavor, and possibly, you know, if you liked what you saw, in a sense that you could see progress in them and where what they had become, maybe if they were on longer than you, and say, you could see something there that might inspire you to take a few more steps in that direction.
I don't quite get what you're asking. It's not clear to me. I don't know if you're asking, how do you know what you should be doing? Or is it okay to leave things behind?
If you're doubting that some aspect of what you're doing on your search or what you're involved, something that you're putting energy into and that you mm-hmm. haven't been putting energy into, mm-hmm. and you may not be seeing a lot of results,
mm-hmm.
is it simply a matter of going within and having an intuition of whether or not you should continue to stick with this? How do you know when it needs to go on that list of things to stop doing?
Mm-hmm. Let me do a quick scan through the memory bank. I deal with this with the kids all the time at work. They do these little puzzles, you know, and I ask them, how do you know you've done everything You know, how do you know that you actually can't get this? How do you determine for yourself when you've done enough? And there's two, I see that there's two ways of going about that. One is totally internal, and that is that we have built enough of a culture of truthfulness within ourselves that we can say, you know, go back to my old donut story. I swear I'll never eat donuts again. You know, sign a piece of paper. 5 years later, I say, you know, I could eat a donut. I'm not the same person that I was 5 years ago. We can only make that call if we have become an honest person. And the other way to determine is like what Mike's saying, when we look at other people, what have they done, what have they become, what have they accomplished going on a similar route to what we have. Suppose, you know, one's analytical and another's more intuitional.
Well, there's two aspects of intuition that I was watching Mr. Rose's DVD recently, and I guess one from a personal experience would be kind of knowing, you know, or say you've been with a teacher for 10 years, you know, and, or hopefully not that long before you realize it, but it's like you kind of get the sense that you've really extracted pretty much all you're going to be out of in this current system, and you're kind of stuck and not going anywhere. And just being able to face that and admit that to yourself. And then in Mr. Rose DVD, he mentioned cultivating intuition so you know whether you're on thick ice or thin ice. And that was a phrase he used that I liked a lot. See, I could get that for you. I guess they're both intuitive today.
I remember that line from Rudy. He says, if I've done everything I can, how do you know? You start, whatever the problem is, I was thinking about what you just said about puzzles, you know, I'm thinking back what are the things that I started doing, why did I quit? And I sometimes wonder if I've ever done everything I could or something. And until you're dead, I mean, you could take one more half breath, you know, and lift the brick with one more brick. It seems like you could, but at the time you're ready to quit.
Yeah,
it's never that way.
Yeah, that's who you are.
I'm shot. This is it. No more. Pack up and go home. Yeah. You know, I give up. Just, you know, retrospect is different, though.
It seems like sometimes the confusion, I mean, I think I feel where you're coming from more with that question. I mean, at least in my experience, I feel that when I return to, again, kind of rehashing that question, the longing itself, that's how I get back in touch with the intuition of what am I even talking about? I mean, it's not like I'm, you know what I mean? It's not like there's some rule about what I have to do in my life. You see what I'm saying? It's not like there's a should or shouldn't in that sense. It's is what I'm doing when I really look at what, you know, I tell myself I am doing and what I believe was originally the motivation. When I go back to that motivation, because sometimes it's just easy to get caught up in all the things that are supposedly an expression of that motivation, you know, the day in, day out patterns and routines and practices, whatever it is. But when I return to that, do I say, is that, you know, where am I?
I think there's, when I do get back to that, there's a sense of either being in alignment or out of alignment.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
So, yeah. It's an honest assessment.
Sean, do you look back when you said you beat the horse till it was really dead, you know, really beat it? Do you look back at that and say, well, that was really worth it and I couldn't have done it any other way? Or did you continue to beat one dead horse again and again?
Did I look at my patterns? Did I recognize my pattern? Yes, I recognized a pattern in myself after I left the farm. And I spent 3 years here and went up and worked at Lindsley Outdoor Center about 3 years. When I went out to Texas, I was doing quite a bit of reflection, looking at journals, that kind of thing. And I saw a pattern that I waited too long to make moves, to make a move. And so I was aware of that. Now, I didn't have the opportunity to, you know, out in Texas when I got my what I was looking for, found an answer for myself. So I didn't have a chance to put that in practice. Although, like our Japanese fellow says, I'm still the same person. I'm aware of that in my current situation. That, in terms of work, I just need to be conscious of.
I'm just wondering, could you have changed anything?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Once you become aware of a pattern, absolutely. I think that's one of the foundational ideas of the Alvagen system, is that by observing ourselves and our patterns, we can move those in a direction more conducive to what we're out to do. Absolutely.
I think sometimes just seeing the pattern is to be free of it. Mm-hmm. We're bound by the things we're not aware of.
I've never had that happen, really. I could see it, but I still had to do, I had to make some mechanical.
I was thinking, how do we know when to continue what we're doing, like the hedgehog? If the hedgehog is the concept of, I think that we could expect results. It's good to stick with something. It's instead of doing it a little bit and saying, oh, there's nothing happening, and then doing something else. And it's like the old idea of digging a bunch of shallow wells. That doesn't get you anywhere. But if you dig the same well, and you dig, and it remains dry, and now you've got a pretty deep well, it's still dry, there's really no point in digging anymore. There should be some results. So it's a combination of, stick to it, but if there aren't any results, then maybe it's time to dig somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example.
How do you know?
Results. If you dig too well,
it doesn't get
Einstein's hallmark of insanity, repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
But until you get to the point where you got it, you have to keep doing it anyway.
Until the horse is really, really dead.
Dead on both sides.
That is a great way to talk ourselves out of doing much, mm-hmm. that line of thinking.
Which question?
The line of thinking, how much do I dig? This well is Luke said it, our core concept, our hedgehog concept, is the longing. That's what I say. And all of the techniques are really ways of passing the time until we... It only takes a moment. It's not... It's not digging a 200-foot well. It's the we may stop digging that well, and the very next well that we dig in a different spot is it. But it could have been the well that we dug to the left of that spot would also be it, and the well that we dug right in front of that spot would also be it.
Paradox at work here.
It's not.
It shifts from
thinking or knowing in your head to feeling it and that you're done with it.
If you take an example like, and there's a couple, take an example like daily meditation. You meditate every day for 3 years, every day from 9 to 10 in the morning for 3 years, and you still don't feel, it would seem like you would manifestly get somewhere, but you don't feel like you are. So do you change the pattern to shake yourself up, or do you just keep, like Rose used to say, more of the same?
It doesn't matter. Because it's only one moment of honesty is all it is. Right?
Yeah.
One moment of honesty. And that moment of honesty may come sitting in front of the television. But we have built a life. We are living a life in prayer and living a life of betweenness. And what we do it's not in the 12th hour of meditation that the answer will come to us. It has nothing to do with the hour. It has everything to do with the intention, the purity of our intention.
Talk about the digging the whole thing, and it almost sounds like first you just stand there in a frozen state of indecision. Rose, remember you say, you know, once the railroad tracks end, if you hadn't developed a kind of intuition or something, you know, it's hopeless. And there's a certain way of walking a hopeless kind of life where you surrender yourself to the endeavor, and choices are made, very important choices, that you don't get in the way. Try to make, get their paid, but you know, you don't, you know, there's a certain way that will, this willful thing that kicks in, because, you know, I think it's one of the nice ones we're talking about, choice. Could be this, could be that. You become this thing that might keep at the 200 foot hole, or might move to the other one, but you don't know why you choose, but you certainly didn't get in the way of it. Move it up. That's just the feeling I had. There's a certain way a person becomes. They're almost replaced by something else, which is a manifestation of that last thing you just said, a pure, you know, a walking endeavor.
Pattern seems to be that among people who have had realizations is that the realization comes after they've stopped doing that 9 to 10 meditation for 3 years because they just got fed up. It's not, they're not getting anywhere with it.
But that wasn't my experience.
I didn't say it was
Huh?
I didn't say it was universal.
No, me, I would have quit meditation if I hadn't had some results. But even when I was putting too much effort into it, there was some result. A small amount, but I could tell something is happening. I don't know what exactly, but something's happening, which kept me at it. For a long time, I kept at it because there was some small result. Digging that well, it was getting a little gooshier. There was something kept me at it. It was enough reward to keep me going at it. When I finally gave up putting any effort into it whatsoever, and finally just used it as a practicing and letting go, results just came almost on a regular basis. Insight after insight.
Yeah.
Which really, you know, that is reinforcing. Okay, well, this is working. This is giving me, I don't know where it's leading, but it's steady. Just like every time you push the wheel when you come back to push it, it's still moving. It's moving a little faster than it was the last time you pushed it. It just keeps getting more and more and more. Otherwise, you push the wheel and it's moving slower than when you pushed it the last time. You're doing something wrong.
Rolling back onto you.
Yeah. So I think we need some tangible result to sure. keep doing it. Otherwise,
sure. Sure. Sarosa systems should validate themselves along the way.
Yeah.
You can say that you just blindly dig a dry hole or wherever.
Sure. Hey, Mr. Rosa tells a story about you, I think, about how early in the group you said, "Oh, I'm not getting anywhere," and then he asked some other people, I think.
Actually, it was
about you,
Phil Osborne.
Was it
Larry? Very
okay.
One of those guys. Yeah. Everybody had noticed. He hadn't noticed any changes. It was Phil Osborne. Hmm. He wanted to go to primal therapy or something, and he hadn't noticed. Said he didn't notice any changes in himself after a year at the farm, and Rose went around the room, and everybody. And he asked people individually, "Do you notice any changes in Phil?" And everybody, without exception, reported that one guy said he was more energetic. And another guy said, well, he's a heck of a lot more reliable than he used to be. And another guy said he's happier than he was. He's not as depressed than he. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't see it himself. Mm-hmm. I wish it was me,
let's just make it, We'll decide today it's you.
It's your story. Just as good as any other.
It's less about the hole, it's more about the digging.
Yeah.
To really be devoted to the act of digging, regardless of how deep that hole is, or where that hole is, or how muddy that hole is.
Yeah, to beat the analogy a few more times.
Make sure it's dead.
Be holy ground.
So what's wrong with the dead horse?
It starts stinking after a while, Mike.
You're going to feed the horse anyway. So dead or alive doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I just want to see the title of it. Thank you.
I guess I feel like it's very important to become conscious of the exact nature of your dissatisfaction or complaint. I feel like it would be useless to, let's say, have a meditation practice if you don't desire the truth.
Yeah, it's finding your koan. That's your natural koan, whatever your particular dissatisfaction is.
Can you define koan? What you mean by that?
That just is your the question that's under your skin that you just can't comes back again and again. Well, it's what provides the energy for what you do. What your question is, it provides the fuel for trying to answer it. It's what motivates you. So if you're using a koan that's come from someone else, so there's a lot less fuel there than if you're using one that comes from deep inside you. Yeah.
I think sometimes in the past I felt that I should want the truth when, let's say, I would have been satisfied by getting something else. But I guess at times the approach I got. I think sometimes if I engage in intellectual analysis, I could see that, well, maybe the core problem is not having the truth. But I guess if you have things that you think that could satisfy you, then it's... And if you don't check those things out, then it might... distract you on your search for truth.
Yeah. I think everyone here could confirm that thought. Now.
No. I've been talking to Sean earlier and had an idea for a session for a TAP meeting. I thought maybe we could try just a proposal. Maybe one person might fight on this. It's called the Shall Answer Man. If you're old enough to know this commercial called the Shall Answer Man, where he's got the Shall hat on and it's like the old gas station attendants used to have. And people would say, what's the meaning of life? And of course, he would have an answer because he was the Shall Answer Man. And I thought that if a person asks a question, a question that's very relevant to them, only to them, not for some other purpose, but, and the person answering gives it their best swing, you don't have to step up to the bat, just gives it the best answer, there's this potential that it's almost like you make an appeal to something greater than personalities and maybe something useful to come out of it. So I just thought that maybe if somebody could ask Sean a question, very important to them, and you almost have to Shall answer it. See what he would say, even though he may not even know you, if you're a good person, or he may not even. And see what the Shall answer.
This isn't what we talked about earlier. You said he was the Shall answer man.
I just thought it'd be interesting.
He's a good human man.
Well, interesting and potentially valuable if somebody had a question relevant to them, just to see your take on it, because you might say, well, I don't know you. Or a person saying to at the matters box might say, well, I don't take all. The conditions are right. I think some benefits are not for the person asking, for sure, and maybe for others too.
Well, I the only thing I would say about that is I would hope that was always the case with people, that we wouldn't have to have a special session where people would feel like they could always answer a question that was on their mind or close to their heart.
That's what my whole thing about, if this is an event, man, you should just dive on anybody who's willing to
sure.
Still and say, hey, what about this? And then see what they say. It's always my... It's not maybe if someone was interested, they maybe felt shy or they had a question that they didn't think was relevant. Take a chance to see what somebody might say since Sean's up there.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. But again, that's always, always. But some people, some people like me, in the day, I wouldn't have been one who would have asked that in front of a group. I would have buttonholed that person later on, one to one, and asked him a question.
Would you have written it on a piece of paper and then passed it to Dave and let him ask it?
No, but some folks might do that.
Well, I guess your session is officially over now.
Officially over.
Thank you, Sean.
Sure thing.
So now we get to ask John all our questions time.